Opinions expressed on ACB Radio are those of the respective program contributors and cannot be assumed to serve as endorsements of products or views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the California Council of the Blind 2021 Virtual Conference and Convention. Before we get started with our next panel, because we're still shuffling things around, I call upon our Madam Treasurer, Ms. Lisa Presley-Thomas. Are you there to give a door prize?
I am here.
All right. Spin the wheel.
So we're doing another $25 Amazon gift card donated by the Silicon Valley chapter. The winner of our door prize is Cachet Wells.
All right, Cachet. Congratulations. Fantastic. Thank you, Madam Treasurer.
You're very welcome.
You have
Roger,
some great
please unmute.
Wheel spinning talents there.
Okay, so let's not wait any longer. I've email this and we'll move right along. So this is going to be a great panel. Hopefully it will be complete, but if we're not, it's still going to be great. And we're taking up a topic that I don't think I have ever actually seen us talk about at a convention in this specific way. You know, there's a sort of a long history of some dissonance and tension, I suppose you'd say, between the Specialized Services Blindness Advocacy Movement and the Independent Living Center movement. And it involves questions such as who provides better services to blind people and people who have low vision? Who started disability history? Some would say it started in the 1960s with Ed Roberts and the Independent Living Center movement. And many of us believe that it really started far, far earlier with the blindness advocacy movement, which set the stage for the Independent Living Center movement. So, but there's lots of questions. Some of the fights involve money, because there isn't a whole lot of money for blindness services, and there's not even enough money for Independent Living Center services, but there's certainly more. So these and other questions have really led to often, you know, sometimes collaboration and sometimes conflict. So to explore some of these issues, we have a great panel today. Our first is a longtime CCB member, longer than probably anybody here. Maybe there's a couple. An activist in the civil rights movement. In fact, there's a rumor unsubstantiated that he cut his teeth at the Boston Tea Party, but I can't verify that. Our next presenter is going to be Larry Wanger, a longtime activist in both ACB and in the Independent Living Center movement, who is currently executive director of the Dale McIntosh Center down in Orange County that serves both Orange County and LA, and a center that has an incredibly long history of providing outstanding services to people who are blind or who have low vision. And then hopefully, if we get a little lucky and technology works, Peter Benavides, who's the executive director of Blindness Support Services down in Riverside County, a very hardworking advocate and executive director for specialized services. Then back for her second straight appearance at a CCB virtual convention, a very hardworking and thoughtful individual, Shalina Heber. We're really glad to have her back. And then someone who I've just heard, I have not met her, but I've heard some amazing things, and I'm really intrigued to hear her, Susanna Gamez, who's the executive director for Resources for Independence, Central Valley in Fresno. So with that, I'm going to start by Mr. History himself, Roger Peterson.
Mr. History himself. Do you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Roger.
Oh, that's good, I guess. For anyone who doesn't know me, which I don't know if there are very many people that don't know me, I'm Roger Peterson, and that's spelled with an S-E-N in Peterson. Because it's Danish and not Swedish. I'm 79 years old, and I was born in Idaho. I was born blind, born in Idaho, and went through the kindergarten and the first six grades in a school, state school for the deaf and blind in Idaho. And then moved to Portland and went to public school and went to college and graduate school and all that kind of stuff. I remember sort of what blindness was like when I started my sentence or whatever at the State School for the Deaf and Blind in Gooding, Idaho, by the way. But in the blindness culture, there's this quiz. You're supposed to be able to name the town that each of the state schools for the blind is in. So Gooding is the answer here. I got to Gooding in 1947. I was born in 1942. And it seems to me that at that time, the blindness community was quite largely the state schools for the blind. Now, I recognize that there are some that are state schools for the deaf and blind, and there are also a couple of schools that are not state schools, that are were private schools. But so Perkins, for example, is still around and still does a lot of good things. But the state schools for the blind were a part of the logic that typified the blind movement in those days, which is that blind people are not sick. They don't need medical attention. They're just people that had the misfortune of not being able to see. And it is said that one of the things that may have been part of the problem in some families between blind children and their parents is that there were a lot of people who believed that your parents were responsible for your blindness because God visited it upon them for their sins. They were not medical institutions, these agencies for the blind. They were educational institutions primarily, but they were in large part segregated. They were run by mostly sighted people, although there were blind teachers of the blind. And they were, they didn't impose themselves on the public. In fact, I used to hear people say that there was a deal that the blind agencies for the blind had with the government or with the public at large, which was, you give us your money and we'll keep the blind people out of your way. I think that, really the essence of what is a blind person was part of this. And they wouldn't say people with blindness. They said blind people, and they were just a kind of people, like insane people or like, other kinds of, I guess, criminals, you might say, and so forth. And all those people tended to have places where they belonged, segregating them from society. I might say that one sort of recent aspect of all that was, as you may know, one of the Congress members who sponsored the ADA in Congress was a California congressman named Tony Coelho. And Tony Coelho had epilepsy, has epilepsy, I guess he still does. And he was really interested in being a Catholic priest, but he was told by the church that he could not study to be a Catholic priest because everyone knows that epilepsy is caused by possession by demons. Anyway, I contend that blind people are kind of a different, they're seen differently by society than people who now comprise most of the disabled community. And they were with, the people who were the unfortunates in society who needed to be taken care of. That all started quite early. Perkins was opened in 1830, I believe. That's a long time ago. And the first special education federal law that I know of, anyway, was the law that provides financial assistance to the American Printing House for the Blind, which I believe was passed in 1859. So we're talking about a long time ago here. We're talking about before 1960. I'm sure that other folks can talk about how the disabled community got started, but I think that by the time the 50s and 60s came, there was the integration of blind people. When I moved from Idaho to Oregon, I got to go to regular school, and I was very happy about that. But I was no longer in the blindness community. I was kind of all by myself. But during that time, there started to be general disability movements and organizations and so forth. One of them, I think, was quite important for a number of years, was an annual convention of the President's Committee for Employment of the Handicapped, and later for the employment of people with disabilities and so on. It was important because all kinds of folks showed up for that convention. I used to go to it. I lived in Washington, D.C. And actually, I was on a subcommittee for a while of that. But lots of organizations that were cross-disability were established in the sort of under the wing of the President's Committee. And then, of course, in 1975, there was what we now call IDEA. It was originally called Public Law 94-142, the Education of All Handicapped Children Act. And that was the most important part of that act. It was aimed at integrating disabled people, disabled kids, with the rest of society. But the important part of it was that it said that a public school district is in charge, is responsible for the education of all the children. In my day, if the school for the blind in Gooding didn't want to take me, I could go home, and the local school district would have no interest whatsoever in my welfare. So that was kind of how the disabled folks got integrated with each other as well as with the general society. And then there'll be more talk later about how they interacted and so forth. And I heard someone say last night that talk about how much animosity Ed Roberts had toward the blind community. I think maybe he had it. I think maybe it was toward the National Federation of the Blind in large part, but I could be wrong about that. I wasn't in California yet in those days. However, I knew Ed Roberts slightly, and I remember helping him once by replacing his breathing tube in his mouth. I was viewed as a renegade blind person who hung out with those other disabled people. So, anyway, I don't want to keep on going here forever. I hope that is a beginning of what we want to talk about. And I guess I would say that I think it all really comes down to there's a basic tendency among all people, I think, to divide the world into us and them. And I think how you view all these things depends very largely on who your us is and who your them is. Jeff, you want to do something else now? You were right enough for me.
Thank you, Roger. Appreciate the beginning. Now let's go to Larry Wanger. Larry, you want to take it away?
Yep. Can you hear me?
We can.
Great. It's always good when technology works. Well, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be with you and to participate in this panel. As Jeff said, I'm currently the executive director at the Dale McIntosh Center down in Anaheim, and DMC has been providing services for folks with folks who have visual impairments probably for as long as we've existed. But specifically, as a contractor with the state on the OIB Older Blind Individuals Who Are Blind program since about 1996 in Orange County, and then we picked up LA County a few years ago. I've had the pleasure and sometimes displeasure, I guess I should be honest, of working at a couple of different independent living centers as a blind person. And it's been an interesting experience, and I have no problem saying and acknowledging that for the most part, most independent living centers fail miserably when it comes to serving folks with a couple of particular disabilities. And I would throw into that category folks with sensory disabilities, people who are deaf or blind or low vision and some other disabilities, and also folks who have mental health related disabilities. Better put, perhaps, that independent living centers traditionally seem to focus on serving best individuals who have physical disabilities. That is definitely not always the case in California, which is great. I've definitely seen differences, but I've also worked at centers in other states where for example, at one center where I was on a staff of almost 100 people, I was the only low vision person. Which is remarkable considering that as independent living centers, the floor is that 51% of the staff be people who have a disability. So in theory, there should be good diversity and variety there, if you will. So I certainly acknowledge that. That is not the case at the Dale McIntosh Center. I'm in fact, often comment to my management team that it's completely the opposite experience. While we do provide services to folks, physical disabilities, no matter what disabilities they have. We have a large contingent of folks who are deaf and folks who are blind who receive services from us. And that's kind of in our DNA. The center was founded by folks who, among other disabilities, had sensory disabilities. And that has stuck with us. And we're fiercely committed to being accessible in every way possible and providing services truly for people with all types of disabilities. And sometimes that, it's just broader workshops we do that and services and programs and initiatives to involve anyone with a disability, be it blindness or physical or deaf or whatever the case might be. Or sometimes that translates to very specific programs that, for example, we have a pretty significant deaf services program. We have a very significant, blindness services program that we're hoping to try to expand even. It's different where I'm at, and that's a positive. I think another significant piece of what we do that's part of our DNA and part of our philosophy is a commitment to a principle that, I mean, I learned that it came from the independent living philosophy, but if you really truly step back, I think it goes back much further than that. And that alludes to those of us with disabilities having a voice in our services and having a voice in everything that affects our lives. And that's the statement that says nothing about us without us. And whether those words were used or not, I know that that statement applies to blind services or whatever services way back before Ed Roberts and the independent living movement. I think that whether we made that our mantra or not, that was our goal. Having control and a voice in the services and programs that are offered. So, but we're very committed to that. I think the best way you see that is that a very large percentage of the staff who work on our blind services program, the staff that work the deaf services program, they are people who are blind or they are people who are deaf. Because who better to learn from than folks who've lived the experience and continue to learn. You know, we don't claim to be the experts, but we continue to learn and share that experience through a peer mentoring model with individuals who need those services. Personally, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about the history. I don't spend a lot of time dwelling on us versus them. But I see why that's an issue. And I do think to a large extent, it's driven by dollars and cents. There is not enough money for services, period. Some programs have more money than others, admittedly. But at the end of the day, I tend to feel that we're stronger together, that while there are needs for particular programs and services, that wherever possible, we need to come together as people with disabilities. Because just, you know, if you're blind or use a wheelchair or deaf or whatever, you're part of that community. And we're stronger together and more effective when we can build those bridges and work together to achieve our goals. And I know that sounds simplistic, but that's really how I approach things. And I've seen it work. So unfortunately, traditionally, I think that always hasn't been the case. I sometimes think that because of this us versus them mentality, we're not as effective as we could be. And so, you know, at any rate, I'll leave it at that and hand it off to the next person.
This is Pete Benavides. I was able to chime in or check in. So good afternoon.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. We are very sorry that it took so much technological, you know, finessing to get you done, but we're glad you're here. I won't give you a reintroduction, but I gave you one earlier. I'm going to put you right on and give us your thinking and your story, Peter.
Well, thank you very much. And I just heard the tail end of the previous speaker, and there's several items that I agree with him. Quite frankly, I wish, and hopefully in the future, the size of the pie, meaning dollars and cents, in the future will grow so that people with disabilities can truly and indeed receive the appropriate services so they could be a part of the American dream. But I do want to speak a little about history, because we could learn a lot from history. And I do reflect back to the passage of SB 105. That was a combined effort between employees of the Department of Rehabilitation here in California, private agencies, consumers, and others, in which their collective effort resulted in SB 105, which ultimately the California legislature passed. And Blind Field Services was created specifically to address the unique needs of individuals blind and visually impaired. And throughout the years, SB 105 has moved forward through the test of time. Specialization is important. However, by me saying that, by no means is it a poke in the eye to individuals in the Independent Living Center movement who were very instrumental years ago in the passage of ADA. Yes, I do believe that collectively we can be stronger together. I feel the same way about our nation. We are red versus blue, black versus white, the haves and the haves more. When we think about specialization, we could reflect back to our lives in life. There's something wrong with my refrigerator, I would like to send it to a specialist versus a guy who's an expert on lawnmowers and vehicles. We in the blind private agency sector do indeed specialize. And in fact, over the years, I know the powers that be in California have recognized that and give priorities to the private agencies in California when serving the blind population. It is unfortunate, and I agree with the previous panelist, that we tend to fight and compete for dollars and cents. Quite frankly, there's nothing wrong with competition. I think competition triggers the need for all of us to get better and better at what we do. And I know that there's been some disputes. In fact, I was involved directly in some appeals with the Title VII grant about 4 years ago. Versus a local independent living center. But here's what I truly believe as far as the capabilities of both the private agencies for the blind and the independent living centers. Because the independent living centers, the ILCs, is like a jack of all trades. They could serve mobility impaired individuals, deaf individuals, and others who have disabilities. And it's my understanding that they've done so for years. However, I do believe strongly that specialization is important. As if when you look at Title VII, and those dollars are very small. Statewide. But that is what it is, and hopefully more dollars will come to play. But, and I believe the department feels the same way. If there's a blind agency in a particular county that applies for and has a history and records of providing meaningful and measurable services to the blind population, then that particular organization should receive priority. However, if there's an independent living center in a particular county in which a blind organization does not exist for whatever reason, then by all means, if that organization is capable to provide meaningful and measurable services, then by all means, they should be granted dollars to serve those older individuals in that particular county. So I will stop right there at this point, and Jeff, forward it back to you for further discussion, and I will certainly be able to participate as we move forward.
Okay, thank you. So now I'll turn it over to, we get these two as sort of a pair, and so I'll ask Shalina and Susanna to decide who they want to talk first and how they want to use their time. So ladies, take it away.
Thanks so much, Jeff. And I want to go back and thank Leslie for the excellent stretch before this. It definitely helped me with mental clarity getting ready to talk to you all today. Susie and I actually had a chance to touch base before this in the spirit of collaboration. So we kind of have a little bit of a plan going into how we'd like to speak to you today. And just really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you. I'm Shalina. I'm with Valley Center for the Blind in Central California. And with that, I'll have Susie take it over from here.
Can everybody hear me?
You're good, Susie.
Okay. Great. I'm having unstable internet, so unfortunately, I'm not going to use my video. But so thank you, Shalina, for that introduction. So my name is Susanna Gamez, and I'm the executive director at Resources for Independent Central Valley here, RICV, here in Fresno, California. And so, yeah, I think that, you know, many points that, you know, we were going to make, or I was going to make, as far as the independent living philosophy and the movement and, you know, what independent living centers are founded upon have, you know, really been touched on by Larry. So thank you for hitting all those great points, Larry. But I just wanted to, we were going to kind of talk about, you know, what, how have Shalina, BCB and RICB have come to the point of collaboration, and how did that just kind of, and I think it's really this shared leadership between and the organizations of the, as far as like the importance of collaboration, right? And so just really keeping in mind, you know, what are the, some of the things that have been talked about are like, what are the gaps that are in our community? So, you know, in some counties or for some centers, maybe there isn't blind services that are available. And so it's really important to take that in, take note of that and know when there are services that we must, you know, take initiative and provide, because, you know, our services, we're across a disability organization, and our goal is to provide services to all people with disabilities. And it's our goal also to be aware of what are those gaps in our community. And fortunately, you know, we have Valley Center for the Blind, who covers I believe all of the counties that RICV covers here in the Central Valley. And so I have under 2 years here for RICV. One of the goals that that I had was to build more partnerships, right? And not create these
closed. More options for
silos.
Record on this complete alt plus camp meeting information view button. Mute currently unmuted. Alt plus A button.
Do you want to mute Peter, please?
Sorry,
I get distracted. Thank you, Peter. And so to not create silos, you know, but really build upon what is provided in your community. And so some of the things, and really just to leverage off, like, what are the things that our independent living center, what is it that we do well in our community, and what is it that, you know, VCB does well? So for example, there's core services that we must provide for within independent living centers, which are things like peer support, youth transition, you know, independent living skills training, individual and systems advocacy, and information and referral. And, you know, some of the things that we do really well is really just try to find those opportunities in the community to make sure that people with disabilities have a voice and are at the table. Forgotten, right? And you know, we're a cross disability organization. So a lot of times, you know, we're trying to bring that diversity, make sure that, you know, our organization, as Larry mentioned, you know, at least more than 51% of our staff must be persons with disabilities. So making sure that, you know, we're diverse and that we have people who have different disabilities or from different cultures that are on staff. And I think that's something that we do really well. And, you know, we must leverage upon that. And so I'm going to go ahead and Shalene is going to talk about Valley Center for the Blind and what they do well. And then we'll talk about some of the collaborations that we have had in our short time knowing each other.
Thanks, Susie. You're having internet issues, so your video isn't working, and my neighbor's gardener is right outside my window here. So I apologize to everyone if it gets really noisy. Just let me know. Hopefully they're almost done. I've been saying a little prayer for that. So Valley Center for the Blind, like I said, we serve Central California. We've been an organization that's around since the 70s. Started out mostly as a social program for seniors. Our founder is a psychologist who's very passionate about giving seniors social opportunities once they experience vision loss to get out of their homes. So we have come a long way since then. We've had you know, really terrific people along the history of our organization who have helped shape us. And I would say a lot of our success we've had in growth in the last 5 years has been exactly what Susie was just talking about, taking a look at what are the gaps in the community, what are the things that your community wants, needs from you, you know. And I wrote down, Larry said, nothing about us without us. And I think what Susie's saying, and, you know, I would just love to echo, is that we feel really strongly as an organization that the people we serve are the people who are giving us the input on what should we be doing. Really, for VCB, what we look at is serving people who are in Central California who are experiencing obstacles to their version of success. As a result of their vision loss and want to improve their lives. So we try to, with each person that comes to us, we start off by meeting with them, talking to them, figuring out what is it that's your goal? Where are you going? And then we provide those specialized blindness services that we particularly well in our area and know how to provide to help them reach those goals. RACD does a lot of tremendous work. And the work that they do isn't necessarily the work that we do. And one of the things that we do uniquely well, I think, is in our community needs assessment, we found that our clients, many of whom were really interested in becoming employed, no matter how well we taught them Excel or how many professional communications classes we gave, if we, you know, did really fantastic email training or whatever the case may be to give them specific job skills, our clients were facing unacceptable issues becoming and finding employment. And we knew that that was an area of need in our community, and it's an area that our community said, hey, we'd love more help with this. So we work a lot now in the employment space. We've been able to hire over, I think the last time I had, we were at 26 individuals with vision loss that we've been able to hire through strategic partnerships in the last year. They are jobs that are open to any community members, but I am very lucky in that most of the people who have taken these jobs have been people who are incredibly qualified and have vision loss themselves. And, you know, that's a space that as an independent living center, RICD and Susie, they're not operating as much in that kind of job creation arena. And, you know, we've heard some really inspiring and tremendous stories about that work that we've been able to do and plan to keep doing for forever and hopefully better and better. We're going to talk about a few collaborative things that we have that have been kind of specific examples. But I want to say, in framing this conversation, you know, I think that one of the one of the great blessings of early on in me taking this role at Valley Center for the Blind was Susie. On several occasions, Susie reached out, and as the director of the Independent Living Center, she found creative ways to support our organization and to include us, because the idea that people with blindness are part of a wider disability community, I wholeheartedly agree with. But we're also a special community inside of the larger disability community. And Susie bringing us in to that wider disability community and giving us more opportunities to leverage the things that other service providers do well that I don't need to do well because they already do it well, has been so wonderful to see that collaboration grow and grow. So I, more than anything, if you take away anything from what I say today, it's that, you know, the reaching out of Susie and the decision to be a collaborative partner is something, that's a decision that, you know, we had to make. We don't need to compete with one another. And while, Pete, I agree, competition does, you know, spur greatness. Competition can create that opportunity for tremendous growth. If we can be collaborative to everyone's benefit instead, for me at least, that's a much, much more mission-aligned path for us. So one of the things that we have here on our list is talking about supporting what each other does uniquely well. So Susie, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about your transition youth services.
Yeah, so some of the things that, you know, we do uniquely well is, you know, we do have, you know, various programs. It's one of our programs, Transition Services, is really been booming in our, and, you know, and that's actually headed by Sarah Harris here, who you all know very well, and has been doing a really great job. And, you know, as you all know, she is a person who is blind, and I think that, you know, one of our main, one of our core services is peer support, right? And so when you think about, you know, organizations that provide specific services to, you know, people who are blind, people who are deaf, or even cultural, other cultures, like people who are Hmong, you know, a lot of times people, you know, they're trusted messengers, if anything. So people feel comfortable going somewhere. And I think that it's also important to have an opportunity where people of different disabilities, different backgrounds, can come together and really share their experiences, because yes, you can learn from each other when you have that similar disability, but you can also learn from each other as far as other experiences that that maybe have happened. But our transition services, you know, we have expanded our reach, especially since this whole COVID situation has come in. We've gone virtual. We've been able to access people from other counties, and we do have you know, a few youth who attend services who are blind or who have low vision. And so that's a perfect example of the collaboration that we're trying to build. And so that's why I say, you know, we're not trying to create silos, we're trying to create partnerships, and really just pay attention to, as I said before, the gaps that are that are apparent in our communities. But if there's not a gap, you know, I think it's, you know, there's value in working together and coming together, because, you know, historically, you know, this whole independent living movement philosophy, it was based it was about all people with disabilities, right? Coming together and making sure that they had a place at the table, that they were included, and that they were a part of a community where they were included. They were a part of the community and not just sidelined. And I think that we've had a lot of success with our youth and working with them when they, you know, when they're at a younger, but, you know, seeing this collaboration between the organizations and knowing that, you know, youth are accessing services at Valley Center for the Blind, but also seeing that value in, hey, you know, there's a service at independent living centers that that can benefit the youth as well. So I think this is just a really good example of how collaboration can be very beneficial for both organizations. Because, I mean, if you really think about it, we, not any organization can do everything, right? This is their, another one of our core services, information and referral. It's our job to find other resources in the community and be able to, and that's another way of teaching our consumers about, you know, being a part of the community, right? Not just thinking that independent living centers or just Valley Center for the Blind are like the only organizations that you can go and receive services. There are many services out in the community. But I think that, you know, one of our goals at RACV is to continue to build those partnerships with different organizations and including centers like Valley Center for the Blind.
Yeah, thanks, Susie. I just want to comment on that. Just going to get real for a second. Don't get me wrong. I love our youth who are blind and low vision. They are awesome. I love getting to see them in our center. When we were in our center, we've got a couple of kids we work with through a charter school program that are very young. And we've got quite a few folks who we work with who are in that, you know, transition age. I love them, but motivating teenagers to get out of bed to come to a program on a Saturday is apparently not my specialty. So what I love is that, you know, Susie's programs do that inclusion. You know, they bring these youth in, and what Sarah does is help give them tools and opportunities to collaborate, to meet other people who have different life experiences. And there's so much benefit in that. But when they need to learn really high level assistive technology for a person who's using a screen reader, that's usually when they come to us. I'm not saying we would never do transition age youth services. We have tried before, but I am very grateful that we have a partner in our area who is good at that, because I appreciate that they are better at that than me, because I'm doing other things. So I think that's just such a great example of you can support what each other does uniquely well by creating enough space between the two organizations that it's a conversation. You know, and if you can be open to that conversation, then you can do a whole lot more and do things much better because you're not trying to do it all yourself. Another thing Susie and I talked about was being considerate of appropriate funding opportunities. I know this is so touchy, but one of the things when we were preparing for this that Susie had shared is that when she's looking at grants or funding or things like that, that she's looking at opportunities for cross disability services. And that's what she's applying for and looking for. And we talked about how when BCB goes to look for grants or funders or other program opportunities, we do not look for cross disability opportunities. We look for opportunities where there is some specificity, where we can make it clear that we're only planning on serving our population of people who are blind and low vision. And that really reduces that funding competition, I think, between the organizations, because I'm not necessarily concerned over what could happen if we lost a funding source to RICV. And I hope, Susie, you would feel the same.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Thank you.
We do feel the same at RACV.
Thank you. So we have time for a few questions. And so, Sheila, do we have any hands raised?
We do, Jeff. Someone with, let's see what the last three is.
Stephanie and says, okay, thank you so much for letting me know.
It's not him. Okay, Sheila? Sheila, you may unmute.
Okay,
I'm here, I think. Yes,
you are.
Okay. I was one of just a handful of people that was against SB 105, and not because I had a problem with a blind commission as such, but I'm blind and I have multiple disabilities. And I've been in and around the independent living movement since 1997. And my problem is that I'm a multifaceted crystal and I'm not just blind. I have many other disabilities. And for example, when it comes to traveling, there are blindness issues, but there are other issues too, depending on what mode I'm using and in what conditions. And so it's very difficult for me to explain to someone who is only about blindness what these other issues are. And there are a lot of people in the CCB, from what I gather anecdotally, who have multiple disabilities and say that they are plagued more by their other disabilities than they are by their blindness, because most of them that I'm speaking to have been blind most of, if not all of their life. But for example...
Okay, Sheila, can you get to your question so that we can... We want to have time for others too.
It's a comment. And my comment is that housing is something that everybody needs, but blind people need help filling out applications. And it's very difficult to get that help. And ILCs don't have enough staff to do that help. I don't have a question, but my thought is that I think we need to expand and recognize multiplicity, not duality. I don't know. Where we're more than one thing and we can't just be sliced up like an orange into different sections. We are one. I am one being, not just blind, not just other disability, not just, you know, I need that more in the CCB than what we have.
Right. Okay. Next hand.
Libby, you may unmute. Libby.
Okay. Thank you. Sheila, Shalina and Susanna, maybe you could help in this regard. We used to have a bowling group through VCB, and the bowling alley, they took out all of the bright lights and put in these terrible black lights, and it was awful. And I tried to confront them about it, and they didn't, actually Ken at the time didn't want to fight it. And it's really sad because we used to have a really good time. We'd meet at like, you know, twice a month and we'd go and bowl and stuff. But when they changed their hole and remodeled and everything and went to the Bowl-O-Rama and it's so dark in there, I don't know how the sighted people can do it. Is there any way that we could collaborate with both groups so that we can get a bowling group back started? I know that there's a facility in Lemoore. And I know that Fresno State has a bowling alley, but it's downstairs and it just depends on, you know, when they're available, when they're not in class. Is there a way we could collaborate to do that?
Hey, Olivia, this is Shalina. I think that was kind of a bummer. We got a little bit away from our social programs for a couple of years there. And I got a little serious with some of the programs that we were trying to really focus on developing. So I hear you on that bowling alley issue. I'd love to see a bowling group restart as COVID subsides. We have reconnected with a lot of our social programs. We're just doing them virtually for right now, but we could certainly talk about that.
Okay, your next question is somebody with last 3150. You may unmute.
Hello.
Hello.
Ah, okay. This is Mitch Pomerantz, and hello, Peter, and hello, Larry. I'm about 3 months late returning your call, but I've got a question that I think you can answer. In 2004 or 5, I happened to be back in D.C., and it was at the time that the National Council for Independent Living released a paper that unequivocally came out against categorical services. And I lost a friend over that, a former CCB member who was running an independent living center at the time. And we argued significantly over that, and we just sort of drifted apart afterwards. So, Larry, is that paper still in play for NCIL? Have they ever retracted it? It might go a long way if they did for those of us who sometimes look askance at the independent living movement. It might help turn us around a bit.
Yeah, hi, Mitch. It's good to hear your voice, and no worries about the returning the call. it's good to connect again, though.
Yes, sir.
You know, quite honestly, I can't really answer that question. I'm aware, I vaguely remember this document from years ago. I mean, we're talking 17 years ago, maybe a little less than that. And I'm familiar with it. I know that that likely came out of Nickel has a rehab committee that they call it in short. I don't remember the actual name of it. And it may have come through that committee. I've never seen anything regarding that being rescinded or them having about face on it. I certainly would be interested in looking into it, though, now that you've brought that up, and we'll do so. But, you know, I think that, I'll just leave it at that. And I'm happy to look into that. I can't really answer your question.
Yeah, I just think it is a significant wedge between the independent living centers and both blindness organizations, honestly, and it really needs to go away. So, and I will give you a call. I need to tell you about Dale McIntosh because I knew the lady.
Oh, awesome! Great.
All right.
Hi, Mitch.
Very good. Well.
Hey, Mitch.
Yes, Peter.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, and good to hear your voice. It's been a while, and I thank Sarah and Jeff and Gabe and whoever else put this panel on, because there's some old friends and colleagues here.
Let me respond.
Yes, sir.
I do recall the document you alluded to, and I've heard nothing about it being rescinded. However, certainly open to hearing maybe a change of thought. I want to first applaud the ladies on the phone, on the panel, as they explained their collaborative efforts. Congratulations, ladies. You were able to do that. I'm assuming that the geographic area that you serve is unique to the two of you. And what I didn't hear was, when funding does arise, do you compete or do either of you back away and allow the other to apply solely? But nevertheless, we don't have that collaboration with a local ILC in Southern California. And let me say that your opportunities to collaborate with blind agencies are increased because there are more organizations serving the blind in Northern California than there are in South.
So let me throw out a question. I have one. And I want to give a shout out to a couple CCB members who we may not know, but who are with me on an advisory committee in this area, and that is David Wilder, who is in CAAVL, and Jacqueline Jackson from San Diego. And the Aging and Disability Resource Connection Center movement is growing. The idea being that these would be established as centers with partnerships in a county between the Area Agency on Aging and the ILC, and that there would be other partnerships that these entities would include, but the basic partnership between be between these two entities in order to get this money. And this is a federal program. It's small now, but it's growing and growing, and more counties are doing it in California. What worries me is that the independent living centers will use this as an excuse to even try to take more of the little bit of OIB money and whatever else we can scrounge out for specialized services for people who are blind or visually impaired under the guise of, you know, the Aging and Disability Resource Center movement. Can somebody respond to that?
Hi, Jeff. I'd love to, if that's okay. This is Larry.
Yeah, go right ahead.
We are one of the two core partners for the ADRC in Orange County. I just want to say that while the ADRCs are a federal program, there really weren't many resources directed toward that initially. And where this is growing is because the state has invested. And so I want to be clear that what you're seeing happening across the state and centers moving into this in partnership with their local AAA or Office on Aging with the county is mostly supported, in fact, almost entirely supported by state funds. And I forget the bill that passed in 2018 that started to move that forward. In our case, I'll just kind of acknowledge that for our perspective, the OIB funds are completely separate in that, you know, we don't intermingle those dollars. However, I do think where I'm concerned and where I'm always thinking and trying to move us is that we need to address the needs of seniors, the aging community who happen to be blind. If that's us directly, as the OIB contractor and facilitating those services, or if it's bringing in other partners to do it, I see a positive in this, in that we're able to bring these two pieces together. We're able to, through our ADRC connection, not just with the Office on Aging in Orange County, but with this extended network of partners that we have, we're able to, you know, reach people who we weren't reaching before. Outreach has been so difficult. And so I see it as a positive. I hear your concern. And certainly I'm aware of that, but I'm not seeing that happening at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, how much more time do we have, Jeff?
I think that's a Sarah question.
You guys can take about 4:20.
Okay. 380, last three, you may unmute.
Yes, this is Ralph Black. I just had a comment. Two things. First of all, I show my age, but I'll say that I've worked for a number of years with Ed Roberts at the time that he was rehab director on various issues, and I always found him to be very supportive of people who are blind and, providing appropriate services and working, on those issues. So I don't think there was any hatred on his part of blind people. He certainly was committed to the independent living movement and wanted to see that be the mechanism by which people got served. But the other thing I would say is that I also worked at the Independent Living Center here in Sacramento for several years back in the 1980s, and I don't know exactly what they're doing nowadays, but at that time we tried to make a point of being sure that we provided services for people who are blind or visually impaired, and when we couldn't do that, referred them to an appropriate place. And I think the model that we heard about from the panelists really makes sense, to have a good, strong connection between the Independent Living Center and specialized programs that serve blind people. And, I think what we've heard about from the Independent Living Center is that are doing a good job of serving people who are blind suggests to me that a lot of it is a issue about having staff there who have that commitment and are knowledgeable enough to provide those services. And it would seem to me that it might be appropriate to try to work out some arrangement whereby independent living centers would either have a person who was specialized in serving people who are blind and visually impaired on their staff, or if they can't do that or don't choose to do that, they should have a established working relationship with a blindness agency in their region so that they can easily make referrals when people do come to them, and that those programs can exchange information and resources.
Thank you, Rob. Do we have time for one more?
Okay, Keith, you may unmute. Keith, you can unmute.
Yes, okay. My name is Keith Kabbalah. I also have multiple conditions. Now, I do have one question. Are the independent living centers, are they independently owned and operated and funded, or are they all working in collaboration with each other? I'm just curious.
Susie, do you want to do that or do you want me to? I'm going to take all the questions.
I think you're good, Larry. Susie is okay. Still on mute there.
Gotcha. I'll jump on it real quick here. So all the independent living centers, there's 28 centers across the state. We're definitely independently operated, if you will. We're each are independently our own 501c3 nonprofit organizations. However, as you may know, we work collaboratively and in some respect have we're very connected to the State Independent Living Council. And then there is a state association called the California Foundation for Independent Living Centers, and 22 or 23 of the centers are members of that organization.
Okay.
We collaborate through that and through other means for sure.
Okay. What I would actually like to see more of is when it comes to cross disability, blind, visually impaired, multiple, and without disabilities, I'd like to. Would be nice if we actually could have somebody on at the centers who specializes in this area and like working with multiple blindness and multiple disabilities. Mm-hmm. That would be a good consideration.
Great idea. Thought.
Larry, this is Shalena. Keith, if I can speak to that briefly, one of the things that we've seen is that there are some areas where there are not blindness service providers, and there are independent living centers. And in those situations, full support for independent living centers to have really strong programs for people with vision loss. At VCB, we do serve people who have multiple disabilities, but we're only speaking to really that blindness component. Whereas for other services, our close partner, RICV, would be the more appropriate service provider. So I think that's what we're talking about. There's room for all. And if you have a leadership model where from the top down, there's a clear focus on the benefits of partnering and how you strategically partner for the best interest of the person you're serving, that's where we all can kind of be collaborative.
Okay.
This is Susie. I apologize. I couldn't get up I had to walk away, but I wanted to add to that in that, we are across independent living centers are cross disability organization. It's important to make sure that we are, providing that accessibility, providing staff that does have expertise in certain areas. And so we want to make sure that, obviously when we're providing services to people of many different disabilities and also people who have, who maybe individually have different disabilities, that we are prepared for that. And if, I've been mentioning about, if there's gaps in just the services that we provide, that we are aware of that and that we can address that by collaborating with other organizations. But we are very mindful of making sure that we have the accessibility needs and keeping in mind that our staff must be, as diverse as possible, right? So thank you for your question.
Well, I want to thank both of those of you that ask questions and most especially those of my great panelists. It's been a pleasure to have had all of you on today. I hope that the audience has enjoyed it as much as I have. This is the type of topic that is interesting and thought-provoking, and it's something that, you know, the more we talk about it, I think the better off we are. So thank you again for working with me to get this together, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. And thank you so much to everyone. You know, it's not very often that you see a panel that has your current boss, your former boss, and somebody you used to work hand in hand with volunteering. So very, very cool. So thank you to all of you. And I think that this is hopefully going to spark, you know, growing conversation of how, you know, we can all better collaborate and moving forward. So, we're getting to the end of our session here, and I wanted to go ahead and hear from our silver level sponsor, Vanda Pharmaceuticals.
Media controls. Movies and TV. The video thumbnails are minimized to optimize full match screen. Media servers tab. Removable storage. Media. Fit all videos. Vanda Navigation for main app. Video list box. All videos. Lights out short. Vanda Pharmaceuticals. Top of Vanda Pharmaceuticals short. Play button. Pause button.
Hello, California Council of the Blind. My name is Shauna Jatho. I'm a clinical nurse educator with Vanda. What my role is to increase awareness on a very rare condition that affects mainly individuals who are totally blind, but also those who are visually impaired with limited light perception. And that condition is called non-24. The three main symptoms are difficulty falling asleep at night, difficulty maintaining a full night's sleep, and or difficulty staying awake during the day. If you'd like to learn more, please reach out to me personally, 202-538-0396. And also if you'd like to have me a part of your local chapter to have a presentation on non-24. Thank you, enjoy the convention.
Skip forward, pop-up, Vanda Pharmaceuticals, skip forward 30 seconds, edit photos button, play menu button, full screen button, more button collapsed, movies and TV back button, videos list box, all video, task switching, media controls, your screen share.
Gotta love the music, right guys? All right, so I just want to remind everybody of what's coming up. So right now at 4:30, we're going to be joined by Larry Gavman, who is going to head up and host our next sponsor and exhibitor session, and that will have some live Q&A with Humanware as well with Energy Upgrade California and a couple other panelists there, including our very own community outreach person, James. We then roll into a couple of announcements, and later on this evening, of course, we'll have a message from our president, as well as elections and lots more other stuff. And so I wanted to see, Larry, do we need to do some shift-a-rooney here in a couple of minutes? And
Not until 5:30.
Not until 5:30? Okay.
So I'll keep looking at the clock. And yeah, I can, when he comes, he's not even here yet. So.
Okay, cool. I wanted to make sure. And so I just wanted to thank everybody. This has been a really, really great session. And then Gabe, do you have any announcements or anything for us? He ran away. All right. Hearing none from Gabe. You know what, Larry? Should we take a minute here to thank our convention committee before we roll into our sponsor exhibitor thing here?
As long as you do a door prize, yes.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a great idea. So I want to thank our convention planning committee. This year, obviously, we've taken on a very ambitious, as I've heard it described, convention. And we have some really great folks on our team. We have Jeff Tom. We have Jean Lozano, who are both past convention planning committee chairs. We have Alice Turner, Rob Turner, Phil Overgon, Lisa Presley-Thomas, Larry Gassman, John Glass, Guillermo Robles. I'm going to mess this up. Who else do we have, Larry? Help me out.
Don't forget about Judy.
And Judy Wilkinson.
Did you get Rob?
And I got Rob. I got okay, Rob good. With Alice. They're a matching set. Yep. They're a matching set. And I think I grabbed everybody there. But we have really, put together some fantastic teams in order to, make this all happen. And, just lots and lots of big shout outs to all of you guys. And, we're all behind the scenes doing a lot of magical stuff. So I just really want to thank everybody there. And Madam Treasurer, can we do a door prize before we hand things over to Larry?
Alice has her hand up as well.
So while you're doing that, this is Gabe. Did I hear you using my name in vain?
No.
No more than usual.
Okay. Oh, okay. Sorry, I received a call from a doctor that I had to answer. So just as I hung up, I heard my name.
Oh, no worries. No worries. I was just seeing if you had any announcements. And, well, let's hear from Alice.
Yeah, mine is just an observation. I know Larry and Rob, Phil, all the folks and the participants that were a part of all of the different videos. Not only the videos, that we made, but the videos that came in, when you think about what will happen for having these videos within our stock, I guess, shelf, YouTube, whatever, how many different ways, can we slice and dice? I was thinking about Christy's comments on the panel. There's just a million gems in there. So, this not only is going to help in how it is that this conference is going, but think about all of the video clips. The world is about videos now. So all the video clips that are going to, and audio clips that will be a part of our future. So I just got really jazzed last night listening to it. So that's just my comment. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, Alice. And I always go with, go big or go home. And we're already all at home, so we have to go big, right? that's the way to do it for sure. And do we have Madam Treasurer here?
I'm here.
All right. Do it to it.
So let's go ahead and give away a donation from Active Blind Inland Valley Chapter. It is a Raisin, and I probably said that wrong, R-E-I-Z-E-N, Tell Time Talking Watch with Alarm and $20 cash. And the winner is John Vandervoort.
All right, John. Congratulations.
Silicon Valley Council of the Blind member.
Terrific.
Yes.
Oh, awesome. All right. We're getting a good, it's spreading out across the state. That's really fantastic. Awesome. Cool. Well, I'm going to go ahead and hand things over to Larry. So, Larry, you go ahead and take the stage, and I'm going to kick back for a minute.
And as she's doing that, I'm going to thank Sheila for hosting for us this afternoon. And I guess you'll have me for the next hour and a half till Diane joins us.
Well, you are very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks,
thank
Sheila.
Thank you so much.
Sheila, have a great week. Convention.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.